Barbara Francis, Reel 3. 1956, the sort of revolt then in Poland. Can you remember anything that led to it? What sort of started that? According to your situation, which would have been, as you said, students, was there any one thing that... was it to do with bread prices rising or anything?
No, it was. I think there were events in Russia which started it.
Would this be Khrushchev and his speech about Stalin?
Yes, that's right. And general awakening of lack of independence and defense in Russia. National feelings started. Because the Russians reduced their grip on Poland and allowed feelings to come out in 1956. And of course, students were first to pick it up. And wanted independence. We are, for instance, forced at school to learn Russian. And I'm glad we did, because now I have another language. But it was too much of it. And a thinking leaders were obviously allowed then after Stalin, after Khrushchev's speech, to then express their views, and it spread among polytechnic students first and then into university. And even to apolitical people, because I wasn't that political. I mean, I was just following it. Yes, but it wasn't particularly active in politics at all. So that started from then on. It went further and further, and then we were supporting the Hungarian allies, that was good, and sending the collecting parcels. I do remember the Jews from Russia used to go to Israel every week. There were trainloads of Jews going to Israel, going through Poland, and my Jewish organization organized that we went to the station when the train came and used to greet them with flowers and sweets and things like that to show them our solidarity and appreciation. We used to go there every week for the train, which was great, and we were very happy to do it.
Did you ever, you know, you were saying you were, you became interested in Zionism about this time. Did you ever have thoughts of going to Israel?
Oh, absolutely. I was, in fact, prepared to go to Israel. What happened that my stepmother went to Israel for a visit to find out if we could actually live there. My father doesn't like the heat, which was a problem, and I came back and decided it wasn't really for us. First of all, in Israel, there were too many doctors who couldn't make a living. But I said I wanted to go to Israel. So my everything of mine was packed and bought up for Israel, and they were going to go to America. But you see, you couldn't get an exit visa to go to America, so what they've done. They pretended to go to Israel as well, as far as Polish authorities were concerned. They got an Italian visa, because you go through Italy to and wait for the ship. Had an Italian visa on a piece of paper, not on their passport, to stay there. And I was persuaded, literally last minute, by a friend from America, who wrote to my parents, and they told me that us not being 21 yet, I should go to America, and I could always go to Israel because I have a right of return. But if I go to Israel and then I don't like it, I'm on my own, and I reach the age of 21, I wouldn't be able to leave and go to America. So I said, why not try there? And then if you don't like it in America, you can always go to Israel, which I agreed to do because it was sensible. So in March 58, we left Poland and went to Italy via Austria. It was first seeing the Western world. It was quite an experience for me.
Was it?
Yes.
Yes. What you know, impressed you? Yes.
In Vienna, the car showroom, I'm afraid. I've never seen new cars and such luxury cars. And I remember sticking my nose to the window, to the shop window, looking at these cars. I thought, boy, what luxury. That impressed me, and I think I'll never forget it. And we stayed a couple of days in Vienna, and we were all with all the transport. My father smuggled some dollars in his body. I won't describe what, but because we couldn't take anything with us. It wasn't allowed. And you can't go into a country without any money. You've got to have someone, especially when you're going to stay in Italy for a while. So then we arrived in Rome, and we said to the people in transport, we have to stay in here, we've got Italian visa. If we have to not go further, we're going to America eventually. And we were helped by a Jewish organization, I believe, and we had a flat. We lived in Rome for 9 months, and from then we went to America.
And by the time you'd gone to America, your transition to the West had occurred in Rome. Is
that's
that right?
Right, that's
you
right.
Were getting used to
oh,
it.
Yes.
Yes. Was it a very different life, you know, when you compare it with the communist regime you'd lived under? Did it seem very different?
It was completely different for several reasons. Partly because it was the Western world. Adverts and everything else, which I've never heard. Secondly, I wasn't working and I wasn't studying. And so I had really very little to do because I wasn't allowed to work. I had absolutely no money, which didn't help in the country back Italy. My stepmother made me a sort of sad dress because they were fashionable at the time. And I walked over because I didn't have enough money for transport living in Rome. I went to some Jewish organization which was supposed to teach me English and I learned a word. Be honest, but I met very nice people and I had a boyfriend and with a Vespa and I had a great time actually because I was actually going around seeing things and he stayed in Italy because I was asked to marry but decided not to. So I was 21 and then I went to the States for the job and I finished with English too.
What part of America did you go to?
New York.
The Big Apple,
right
in the midst of the capitalist system.
Absolutely. But I worked for university, so I was immersed in capitalist system because university all over the world are the same, I'm afraid. So it was, I had a good time. I saw my uncle, my real mother's brother, who took me in his room a bit. And was my cousins. And my father wouldn't have anything to do with him, which is sad. But I had a very good time. Then I went to Israel because I felt that I made up my mind I was going to see what Israel was like. And the first opportunity I had during the holidays, so I had 6 weeks leave and I took some unpaid leave. I think I went for 2 months to Israel.
What year would that have been?
1960. I went to Europe first. I was unusual for a girl to travel on completely on her own. I travelled on my own. I went to Europe, I went to Paris, I stayed there. I had it all organised. And then I went to Naples. To Rome and to Naples and took a boat to go to Israel. Mm. And I met my future husband on the boat to Israel. Very romantic.
But this, of course, would have been before the Six-Day War, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes.
This would have been Israel within its sort of borders, the pre 67 borders, yes.
So I came back to America and the next year the person I met, the chap I met, we came to New York and we got married and I came here.
Yes. Did you ever want to find out about the Holocaust, you know, which is so much part of your history, really, isn't it? You know, I wondered how connected you felt with this part of your history.
Not at the time, at all. When I got married, I never talked about the Holocaust, I never talked to the children about it, I knew nothing about it. My ex-husband knew something, obviously, about it. My former mother-in-law, who I'm extremely fond of, she's 92, she's nearly 92, still working, teaching. Lovely person from Berlin, so she managed to get her family before the war. She married an Englishman, and he said to father, and she got her family. So she knew more about it than anybody else. It's very close to her anyway. And my ex-husband knew something that nobody else knew. We did not talk about it, you know, in Britain or anywhere else. We just do not mention their folklore. It didn't exist. The only contact I had was a book written by Alexander Denner, my father's friend from the camp, in which my father's figures in the book, Holocaust Kingdom. That's the only thing I read, nothing else.
So you were able to find out a bit about your father's experience?
From the book.
From the book, yes. And he never spoke about hiding you, you know, finding...
Never at all. Never, not a word. I mean, he hadn't spoken at all, but we actually didn't speak. We just didn't have anything to say to each other, ever. There was no contact, no communication. Not in the early years, not in the later years. No, we led a very independent life.
Do you think there have been sort of lasting effects of that experience of hiding, you know, particularly the early days of having to hide behind a wardrobe? Do you have any sort of effects from it, do you think? If you reflect...
Very hard to say, but I think I had greater effects on my later life. When I was growing up as a teenager, pre-teenager, lack of warmth. In affection, and it was big minus in my life, and it certainly affected my personality. Yes. Had I stayed with my foster parents, I would have been perhaps less educated, perhaps, and more adjusted to life. I often regret that.
Yes, it seems from what you've been saying, it would have been a much simpler life, wouldn't it? A different class, really. You wouldn't have been intelligentsia, but...
I might have, you don't know, because the opportunities for children to study in the land was quite bad. So I could have probably gone to university anyway. I probably would have looked for my roots all the time. I would have different problems, I suspect. And I probably would have, I think, ended up in Israel in 1950, eventually. Because that I would look for my roots, I would be more intensely interested in that. And just gone, a lot of children have gone.
Yes. Did you get a very strong sense of your Jewish identity? You know, the fact that you were brought up really going to church. Was there any dilemma in sort of coming to terms with the fact that you were Jewish and that you had this different identity?
Different identity from other people?
Well, yes, the fact that you'd been going to Catholic churches and taught to pray and that. Was there any dissonance when you learnt that, you know...
Well, I knew all along I was Jewish. I had a very strange experience, because 1947, when I was living in Gdynia, I had a very religious teacher, and she made me become really religious, and she christened me, and she made me go to First Communion, with my knowledge, I was very, very strongly Catholic, because the people who actually took me, Mr. Novatsky, did not force religion on me. He wasn't at all religious, never went to church. She used to go to church just for presentation purposes, so to speak, because she wanted to be seen, because otherwise it's no good. But they actually never christened me. I never went to First Communion, I was too little, I think. And my teacher in Gdynia, on the 4th of December 1947 or 48, christened me. Then on the 8th, I do remember, I went to First Communion. There was a marriage of our maid, Gdynia, and my parents didn't know anything about it. It came out when we were in Italy, because Gdynia had to send false certificates or something of them being Christian. She sent a real one of mine, and it came out. I was nearly killed. No, not really, but I was furious that I kept it from them. I kept everything from them. They couldn't understand. I wasn't close. So I was quite religious at the time, because she really made me very, very religious, she said, at that school. She shouldn't have never done that as a teacher. It was absolutely wrong, and I see it now, but I fell for it. But communist regime did not approve of religions. Religion was Stalin, religion was Russia, and churches were, although they were full, but people were not encouraged, youngsters were not encouraged to go. And although I went to church at first, my stepfather and my father never said anything about it. They didn't stop me going, they didn't encourage me, they just left me a laissez-faire attitude, which was quite reasonable. Because after a while, being influenced by the communist regime, I just completely stopped going. So it was becoming irrelevant in my life. So therefore, and as I joined my parents, because all my parents' friends were doctors, most of them were Jewish, it's being Jewish was a sort of normal thing. But because the religion didn't come into it, my parents were totally unreligious. I didn't know anything about Jewish religion as such, about the holidays. Nothing was ever celebrated. We ate ham, we ate them. It's complete of all the other people, the other Polish people. So Jewishness was an ethnic thing, nothing else. Also, I must say, the Poles, there is no such expression as Polish Jew in Polish. There is, you are the Pole or a Jew. So we were Jews, but we were like other people. But we're Jews because we were told we were ethnically Jews, not Poles. But religion didn't come into it. There's no religion.
But I suppose, you know, the fact that you were interested in Zionism and therefore Israel, did this sort of strengthen your sense of being Jewish?
Yes, I'm sure it did, yes. Yes. I had my stepfather's cousin went to Israel in 1949, which I liked her a lot, very nice girl, woman. And she started sort of awakened in those very early years, but not much, because I was still strongly Catholic. And she went her own way, I went my own way, I was pretty sure she went. By 1956, definitely strengthened my feeling of Jewishness. But it was feeling of having a nation of your own, not to be different, not to be member of a minority group, not to say you're different, living in a country where everybody's Polish and you're not Polish, you're not considered Polish, although you speak the language and have the same customs. So that was rather emphasized. Totally non-religious environment, but more nationalistic.
So what is the state of Israel, you know, the fact that there is a state of Israel for Jewish people, is that important for you to know that that's there?
Yes, it is, very much so. Because it's the only place where I'm like anybody else. I'm not a member of a minority, I might have a foreign accent in Hebrew now, because I'd be a Polak there, that's knowing Israelis. I probably couldn't live there because I'm too Anglicized now. And I can't take their habits. I find it too difficult. So my cousin said, who the one who lives in Israel and comes to England very often. But it gives me a feeling that they know different than I am. They might have come to the country to Israel 50 years before me, so what? They still come from the same sort of background and environment, but born fine. If I had children, they would be born there. And I think I feel in Israel that I'm no different. Although I feel a tourist, on the other hand. I haven't been there for years now, but I feel a tourist. But on the other hand, I feel something which I don't have to hide my Jews. I don't hide anywhere here because I find Britain very easygoing and I don't have to hide anything. It's not a relevance. I live in Hazelmere. No Jewish people here, and they know I'm Jewish. It doesn't matter. I could be anybody else. I'm here, to be honest, I'm taken what I am. If I'm a good British girl, I'm accepted. If I'm not, I'm on friends. That's what it is. Mm.
Are your children curious about your early life, you know, and what happened to their grandmother and other members of the family? Are they interested in this part at all?
My older son is not very interested. My younger son is a bit interested. I was interviewed by Shoah Foundation, and I have a videotape. It's terribly sound, actually, played that tape. And they borrowed the tape and they listened to it. And they also took part in the interview, both because that's how the system works. First I was interviewed, then my husband and then my children. So they're interested, but not to a great, great extent. I know some people who are second generation are far more interested.
Well, Barbara, thank you very much indeed for telling me so much about your experience. Not only, you know, the war, but post-war Poland as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for interviewing me.